Welcome to our midweek study. There is so much going on. Am I on? Because it doesn't seem very loud. All right. You hear me? Okay. This is a crazy time. You guys all know that. It's crazy. And my phone continues to buzz all the way up, and even after I'm up here, with more just coming from every direction. Everywhere, not just here, but all over the place, where there are liberals in the executive role, everywhere, in every single state, governed by a Democrat, every one of them, are experiencing the exact same violations of freedom that we're dealing with here, everywhere. Everyone, everywhere is demanding you get vaccinated or you lose your job. And they go first healthcare, and then they go to all child care. That's next. You've got a public, or you've got a daycare, public, private school, anything. Even though children are relatively unaffected by these viruses, relatively, it's relentless. I was called this morning. I got a call from Matt Staver, president of Liberty Council. And as soon as I answered, he said, "Man, your governor is crazy." To which I said, "Thank you. Like, I don't know that." But what inspired this? And it was the removal, as if with just a wave of the scepter, the queen could just say, "No more religious exemptions, for I will it. I will it, therefore it is the law." And they sent her a letter yesterday. So the letter, this is how you do things legally. First, you send a letter and you state your case and you lay out what the law is and you wait for a response. Based on her response, they have every intention of suing our governor. So we still do have, at least right now, we still have the Constitution, and we still have the law on our side. But whether or not ultimately, even after the Supreme Court rules on such things, will they still honor? There is such lawlessness, there is such presumptuous grabbing of power that it's really unprecedented. It's kind of like you guys understand the concept in football, it's a blitz. It's a complete blitz. It's in every direction. Every single direction, every little tyrant is taking everything they can believe they can get away with. Meanwhile, you guys all know what's going on in Afghanistan, the Taliban takeover, the horrors of that. And just before the service, I received the headline from Breitbart. Taliban killing people found with Bibles on their phones. So the first thing they do, and they're doing this just outside the airport, they search your bag and they say, "Let me see your phone." And if you have a Bible app, if you've got Bible on your phone, you're an Afghan, they'll kill you on the spot. Now, do you really think that Biden administration cares about that? You know better. They're under the influence of the spirit of Antichrist. They don't care about that. That's irrelevant to them. I know this is going to sound funny to you, and it was funny to me at the time, but years ago when George W. Bush was the president of the United States, I was actually invited to the White House. Been there twice. I don't know how. I still honestly do not to this day know how. I have no idea how my name got on a list. It was weird. It was like something that only God could have done. I have no idea how my name got on a list. So 100 Christian leaders are going to meet with the president, and they're invited. I'm nobody, and I was less nobody then, or more nobody. I was more nobody. I was less somebody 17 years ago. I was banging shingles on the roof of the garage I just built, and my cell phone rang. I couldn't believe it was a joke. It was an invitation from the White House to come. I don't know, you probably didn't know that, but I went. And when I get there, you know, I'm in the company of all of these big shots, and they are people, old men that I've been listening to for years, the people that with big national ministries. But for whatever reason, the Lord wanted me there, buy a suit for the occasion. And what few Calvary guys that were there were all mega church pastors, and they made fun of my suit because they knew it was, as in the words of Don McClure, who was there, this is completely hypocritical. Anyway, during that time, the President George W. Bush, who was supposed to maybe have a few minutes to address these Christian leaders, ended up getting comfortable and staying for over an hour, answering questions, and just, he found a friendly audience, one that he could relate to. And you know, I consider President George W. Bush a neoconservative. Certainly not a Reagan Goldwater conservative, really neoconservative. And at the time he was explaining Iraq and Afghanistan. And he's explaining from his heart. He said, I believe in freedom. I just believe in freedom. I believe people want freedom. And my heart went out to him then because I could see, you know, he sincerely believes this, but what it revealed was that he thinks America's chief export ought to be freedom. Where did our freedom come from? Our freedom came from a spiritual revival that was centered in this book. Our freedom came from an ethic that was created by a biblical mindset. A biblical mindset that saw people as valuable because they're created in the image of God and people have rights that are God-given. You can't just export the product, the byproduct, I should say, of a revival. A revival happened, it produced great faith, it produced an ethic. The ethic, I tell you again, produced wealth and freedom, you know, the greater the wealth, the greater the freedom, the greater the prosperity. It's kind of a rule. The greater the tyranny, the greater the poverty, it's a rule. And so, you know, here was a president explaining to what he considered a friendly audience that we just give them freedom. They'll take that freedom and they'll do things with it. He was wrong, and they didn't do anything with it. And freedom and democracy is just another route to mob rule. It really is. You cannot. Where the predominant religion is Islam, and Islam means submission. A Muslim is a submitted one. You can't have freedom. You cannot have any of the so-called equality, any of these notions of inclusion. My heart goes out to every single man and woman who have directly or indirectly suffered loss because of that philosophy that all we need to do is just export freedom. We just need to, you know, win freedom, depose their tyrant, and grant them freedom, and then get out. Terrible thing. It's an awful thing. I hate seeing what's happening. I hate hearing what's happening. The betrayal. I, like you, am embarrassed. I am ashamed of our country and those who are in power and what they're doing right now. And the betrayal of those who befriended and trusted our leaders for two decades, that betrayal is so intensely wicked. It is so evil. One of the results of it, and I have many times encouraged you, all of you, to get my good friend Amir Sarfati's app, Behold Israel. And Amir was quick to quote the chief newspaper from China, from the Chinese Communist government's, you know, sort of media outlet. And needless to say, the Chinese communists, through their media outlets, were telling Taiwan, Oh, you look, this is what you're next. You are next. At the same time, the sentiment is spreading all over the world, but particularly in the area that is of great concern to us, and that is around Israel. You have Russia and you have Iran right now, emboldened. And everybody's talking about over there, overseas. You're not hearing it here. But over there, they are talking about the post-America world order. So what has prevented Russia and Iran from full-on war with Israel has largely been that we, the United States, have backed them up. We've been their backup. I don't know that they necessarily need us, but we've been there. But now the world is getting the sense that you cannot count on America, and we may not be there. Things are changing quickly. Are these crazy days to live in, or what? But see, all of that, as far as I'm concerned, as I said on Sunday, I say again right now, so accelerates prophetic scenarios with regard to the Magog invasion, events that involve the transfer of massive power. Again, that invasion causes Russia to cease to be a real factor, a real threat, causes all of Islam to be willing to come to the table. I'm just saying to you that all of this accelerates the things that we already do know are inevitably going to happen. We just don't know when. So meanwhile, we're right here in the middle of our own fight. We are fighting for freedom, for our right to assemble. We are fighting for that, and we'll continue that fight. And may we get raptured right out of the fight. We are now having to fight for our own medical freedom, for rights of conscience. These things have been abandoned by much of America. It's no longer America. America has quit being America. So we are, here we are, midweek at Calvary. The whole world's gone crazy around us. But we have here our open Bibles and the wisdom of God's word. Let's just put it all over on the shelf. Now that we can do a whole lot about the whole world, and let's focus on the wisdom of God with regard to our daily living. Proverbs chapter 15 tonight, 15 and 16, the Lord willing. Whew. All right. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 1. A soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. Grievous words, ESV says, harsh words. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this verse does tell us there's a difference between responding and reacting. Responding versus reacting. I have tried to follow, I don't do it perfectly, I've tried to say the second thing that comes to mind and say the second thing that comes to mind in a kinder way than my first impulse. A soft answer. Grievous words or harsh words, they stir up anger. So it is possible by our response to de-escalate strife, to absorb, as it were, a wrong, a soft answer, a reasonable answer. I don't generally get in fights with people in traffic. I don't think I ever have. But I've had people mad at me a lot. I guess it's the way I drive. Or it's just, I don't know, I think I drive safe, but I don't always pay attention to what everybody else is doing. I pulled into a parking space one occasion in Southern California. Pulled into the parking space, it was available, I pull in, there's a guy behind me laying on his horn. I thought, what in the world does he want? So I rolled the window down, and I asked him, what? as a young Mexican male going, "You took my space! You took my space, man!" I said, "This space? Yes, it's my space!" And I was amused, honestly. I wasn't in any big struggle. I just went, "Well, I can back out of it if it means that much to you. And you can have it." He goes, "I would appreciate it." I go, no problem. So I back out. He pulls in, but he keeps an eye on me because he thinks I'm going to ram him with a rental or something. I don't know what he thinks. But I go looking for another place, and he just keeps one eye on me while he heads into the whatever store. That was a good occasion. I have blown it many times, but that was a good one. One of those rare occasions where I had a soft answer, and it turned away wrath. He was really mad. What's that big deal when you're living with this every day? Every day, you know, you're trying to find your parking place in Southern California. Drive you crazy. You make anybody crazy. And you took my space. It's possible to respond. You know, I got a piece of advice for you. I don't know if you can do this. I've done it a lot. Somebody really wants to go off on you? Have you ever had people going off on you? Is that, you know what I'm talking about? When somebody just, and as soon as they start, and your first impulse is to go, "Stop right now, don't talk to me like that, stop it right now," or whatever. If you can instead go, "Okay, get it all out, go ahead, finish what you're saying, I'll respond when you're all done." If you can actually not flip, and just let them, blah, blah, just sort of vomit it on you. If you can do it, when you're all done, when they're done, you go, "Okay, are you done?" Then usually, they feel embarrassed about it, if you let them. They won't feel embarrassed about it if you retaliate, if you start escalating it. But if you let them, they get all done, they'll go, often, and then you can sift through that vomit, as it were, like you're panning for something. You go, "Oh, look, there's a nugget. There's a nugget of truth. Okay, all right, I can own that. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, there's that much. But the rest of it, I think you kind of overstated it. What do you think?" I'm telling you, I've blown a lot, but I've also had some success with this. And I found that things go way better when you just let people get it out. And if you let them get it out, usually when they're done getting it out, they're thinking it's going to be so gratifying to tell you off. And then they get done and you didn't react, they feel silly. I like them feeling silly. When, you know what I mean? When they have just burst. Sometimes there's a lot more going on than what you realize. Anyway, I've stayed too long on that one verse, but I can tell you from experience, I have seen that a soft answer does turn away wrath. I've also seen that a harsh answer turns it up. Verse 2 says, "The tongue of the wise useth knowledge aright, but the mouth of fools poureth out foolishness." Just pours it out. Just pours out folly. Just, remember that little, "I'm a little teapot, short and stout," remember? "This is my handle, this is my spout." Well, this is the spout. And people do just pour verbally. And what does the mouth of a fool pour out? Just more foolishness. But the tongue of the wise, if you're wise, you have knowledge and you can use it right. See, there's the thing. You can have knowledge as a fool. What good is it if you don't know how to use it? Verse 3, "The eyes of the Lord are in every place. In every place, beholding the evil and the good." You can be comforted at least by that, that God's not unaware of whatever evil happens to be at work. There's no place for evil to hide. God is aware of it. God watches. God is allowing the test. He sees it. He's not unaware of anything. He also does not miss any of the good. He doesn't miss. That's comforting. Verse 4 says, "A wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness therein is a breach in the spirit." I like it with the English Standard Version. That one, a gentle tongue is a tree of life. Gentle tongue. But perverseness in it breaks the spirit. Now, you know that's the truth, don't you? That harsh words can really affect someone else's spirit. We have such an opportunity with the gift of speech to do people good, to lift them, or to knock them down. It's true. Verse 5 says, a fool despiseth his father's instruction. That's a fool. You despise, your father's trying to teach you something. But he that regardeth reproof is prudent. If you can regard reproof, if you can consider it, that's prudent. I like that word, prudent. Thoughtful and deliberate. A prudent person is one who is thoughtful, deliberate, and they look ahead. Verse 6 says, in the house of the righteous is much treasure, but in the revenues of the wicked is trouble. Even in the income of the wicked, it comes with trouble. Verse 7 says, the lips of the wise disperse knowledge. Disperse knowledge. But the heart of the foolish, not so much. King James Version, not so. Yeah, not so much. Dispersing. Just think of this oscillating sprinkler. My grandson Marcos, he was on a top bunk. And he was sick. He had a hurl. And he did. We studied that mess. We marveled at where it went. Walls, floors. And he was up there trying to get down the ladder. And that is really the mouth of the foolish. But conversely, think about what a pleasant thing the dispersion of knowledge is, wisdom is. Now think about that for a second, the lips of the wise. Don't you like being around the wise? When you're with the wise, don't you find, well, you always learn something. I love this interaction where I come out of there going, wow, I'm a little smarter. Just hanging out with them. Because their lips just disperse it. Just disperse it. Hey, there's some knowledge. Thank you. Hey, that came out of you. And where did it come from? Came out of the mouth of the wise. Check out verse 8. The sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord. But the prayer of the upright is his delight. Abomination versus delight. This grosses God out versus this blesses him. Well, what is it? Even the sacrifice of the wicked. Now think about that for a second. Everybody that comes to sacrifice is coming to sacrifice because they're sinners. But this is another category here of the wicked. Coming to sacrifice, unrepentant. Like they're just sort of buying the right to sin some more. You know? Even the sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord. So they may be meeting the legal requirement. The law requires this sacrifice for the sin. But it's offensive to God. God's going, what do you think, I'm stupid? That's what he's thinking. Verse 9, the sacrifice of the wicked is mentioned. Now in verse 9, the way of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but he loveth him that followeth after righteousness. Think about that. The sacrifice is an abomination, and the way of the wicked is an abomination. Verse 10 says, correction is grievous unto him that forsaketh the way, and he that hateth reproof shall die. So that same verse in the English Standard Version, there is severe discipline for him who forsakes the way, and whoever hates reproof will die. So it's a dumb thing to hate reproof. Nobody enjoys reproof, but still, a wise person receives it, thinks about it, processes it. Verse 11 says, hell and destruction are before the Lord. How much more than the hearts of the children of men? If he can see right into hell itself, and he can, then why would any of us think that he could, you know, not see what's going on in our heart? The hearts of the children of men. Nobody in hell can hide from him. Certainly can't hide any secrets in our hearts. It's true. Verse 12 says, the scorner loveth not one that reproveth him, neither will he go unto the wise. Not only does the scorner not appreciate reproof, he's not looking for wise counsel. He doesn't go to the wise. He or she doesn't appreciate reproof, and they don't go looking for wise counsel. Oh my goodness, the worst. I have to say that the dumbest place where I've seen this practiced is in jail, in prison. My only jail and prison experience has been as somebody who's allowed in and then allowed back out so far in doing ministry. But I've always marveled that in jail, there are guys who sit around like they're just wise old sages and everybody goes to them. And you find yourself going, "What? Why? He's so wise, he is where you are." It's weird when you go in there and you see these guys, they have a following. And you have to go, what is wrong with you? Can't you see the guy you're following? Is he no better off than you? It's a strange thing, it really is. But they don't go to the wise, they go to the dumbest people. They're a scorner. Go to your fellow jailbird for counsel. Now I realize there's exceptions. Let me make it clear that there are exceptions. I know that there are godly people who are doing prison time. I know that. This is a rare exception. There are people who actually have pursued biblical knowledge there. But I'm talking about a general principle. In the cell block, you've got guys who actually have a following and they're not worthy of it. I mean, you know what I mean. They don't go unto the wise. Verse 13 says, a merry heart maketh a cheerful countenance. A merry heart makes a cheerful countenance. But sorrow of the heart, the spirit is broken. By sorrow of the heart, the spirit is broken. And so it is. Our face does usually reveal what's happening in our heart. Verse 14 says, the heart of him that hath understanding seeketh knowledge, but the mouth of fools feedeth on foolishness. Now, ain't that true? Now, you got to either remember your foolish days or be really acquainted with fools to remember seeing them grazing on it, just grazing on foolishness and just laughing their stupid heads off on foolishness. Yeah, more of that, please. Verse 15 says, all the days of the afflicted are evil, but he that is of a merry heart hath a continual feast. So really is a matter of perspective. It's an amazing matter of perspective. There are people in this room right now that are going through such troubles and such afflictions, and you wouldn't know it. I know a couple of guys, I won't single them out, who are dealing with health issues, and they've dealt with chronic, serious health issues. I know people. I am in a position to know of people who they're like used to receiving bad news from doctors. They call and they deliver bad news. They're actually used to it. And they're still busy about their Father's business, serving the Lord. I'm amazed by it. I really am humbled by it. He that is of a merry heart hath a continual feast. It's just another feast if you've got a merry heart. If you've got a merry heart, you're like, another feast. We're all going to die. We're all going to get out of here. Let's eat. Let's have a feast. Let's have a party. Verse 16. Better is little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble therewith. That's right. Better off to have a little, to be poor or of modest means, and still have your reverence for God, than to be wealthy, have great treasure, and have all the trouble that comes with having no fear of the Lord. Verse 17 says, better is a dinner of herbs, okay? Better is a dinner of herbs where love is, than a stalled ox with hatred therewith. Okay. Can you plainly see that the Bible is comparing a salad with a steak. You get this? The Bible's doing this. The Bible's saying you better off to have a salad, a dinner of herbs. That's way inferior to not only steak, a stalled ox. Stalled? Yep. He's been kept in a stall. He's not working off any of his fat. He just in the stall, they bring the food to him. He's relaxed. And if he's one of those Kobe cows, fortunate enough to be one of them, they bring him food and beer. Kobe beef, they want them beef. They want them critters loose. They give him massages. They massage the Kobe beef. You want to know why it's so expensive? There's a lot of manpower, a lot of labor involved. Just relax and be happy, be happy. Just don't work. Just chew, 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 and we'll just rub you down. So we're talking about a stalled ox. You guys, you get this, right? We're talking about good tender beef. The tender beef of a happy cow. The cow's not like, boy, I really wish I could be out there just running the hills. That's not the cow thought. The cow's like, oh, more food, keep bringing it. You just keep it a-coming. I'll just keep chewing. A stalled ox. Just standing there chewing. I'll just lay down for a while. And I'll chew. So you understand, the Bible is making a comparison. And you'd be better off with that salad, long as there's love, than to have that stalled steak in the middle of hate. You get the picture? It's in the Bible. It's right here. Verse 18. A wrathful man stirreth up strife, but he that is slow to anger appeaseth strife. So there's strife is a reality, you guys, in this world, right? So you can either appease it, you can put those fires out, or you can throw gasoline on them. That's true. That's what a wrathful man does. Verse 19 says, the way of the slothful man is a hedge of thorns. But the way of the righteous is made plain. A hedge of thorns. That's an awful thing to try to get through. Do you understand? The slothful man ends up making everything harder for himself. It's a hedge of thorns. You know, it's weird, but we've said this before. The guy would have it better off if he would just go work. Do the uncomfortable thing. And then work diligently. Ends up making everything harder for himself in the name of trying to make it easier, right? That's a strange thing. Verse 20 says, a wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish man despiseth his mother. Well, that's a foolish man. Why would you despise your mom? Well, you're foolish, that's why. But you don't know my mom. You're a fool. The Bible says plainly, you despise your mom, you're a fool. It's a foolish thing to do. Verse 21 says, folly is a joy to him that is destitute of wisdom. Destitute of it. Totally broke on the wisdom thing. And folly, it's a joy. I love more folly. They get so excited about getting together with their other fools and just celebrating their foolishness. But it says, a man of understanding walketh uprightly. Upright. Verse 22, without counsel, purposes are disappointed. But in the multitude of counselors, there they are established. The ESV says, without counsel, plans fail. You got, surely, I was thinking about a friend, somebody I liked a lot, he was a good friend of mine many years ago. And he wanted to be in the restaurant business so bad. He wanted to. He's always trying to make a case why it could work. But he was always taking the wrong model. He would like take the numbers from McDonald's. You know, it was a monstrous international burger chain, right? And he'd extrapolate those numbers to why it could work for him. I remember thinking, man, I'm not the smartest guy in business, but you're not McDonald's. Dude, you're not McDonald's. And he was pretty sure he could make it work. And it was abundantly clear to me that he wouldn't bounce that business plan off anybody that was really smart in business. Instead, he'd bounce it off somebody dumb like me and go, what do you think? And I go, I think you better talk to somebody smarter than me on this stuff. You gotta get, without good counsel, purposes are disappointed, plans fail. All right, the quotable Benjamin Franklin here, he says, in failing to prepare, we are preparing to fail. It's profoundly true, isn't it? A multitude of counselors, there's, on that one verse, let me just say one thing. I've seen people quote this. The multitude of counselors, their safety, and it's not really the sentiment this verse is explaining or expressing. Instead, it's somebody who keeps going from one person to another looking for advice they want. They got an itching ear and they're looking for somebody to scratch it. And they'll quote, well, the multitude of counselors, and I'll be like, you've already talked to 10. They all told you the same thing. They're looking for another one. Why? Because they haven't told them what they want to hear yet. So you know what I'm talking about, right? The multitude of counselors, they are established. Verse 23, a man hath joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season. How good is it? A word spoken in good season, in due season. It is amazing how much Proverbs talks about this precious gift of speech and what we can do with it and how we can affect other people's hearts with it. English Standard Version on verse 23 is, to make an apt answer is a joy to a man. An apt answer. And a word in season, how good is it? Come on, you've all received that before, haven't you? Haven't you received a word that was in season? A word spoken in due season. If somebody said something, it was just the right time. You might even find yourself going, wow, oh, that was the Lord. They couldn't have known I needed to hear that. How good it is. Verse 24 says, the way of life is above to the wise. Or English Standard Version, the path of life leads upward for the prudent, that he may depart from hell beneath. So wisdom has us moving in the right direction. And heaven, it's above. Hell, it is always beneath. Verse 25 says, the Lord will destroy the house of the proud, but he will establish the border of the widow. The widow is generally humble, dependent. It's the reason why she's mentioned in this one. She's contrasted with the proud. Not that many proud widows in the ancient world. A widow was not known for pride, but for total dependence upon God. Verse 26, the thoughts of the wicked. We already read the sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination, and the way of the wicked is an abomination. Now we have the thoughts of the wicked are an abomination. Even the thoughts God is offended by. But the words of the pure are pleasant words. He that is greedy of gain, verse 27, troubleth his own house, but he that hateth gifts shall live. That's bribes. If you hate bribes, you will live. But if you're greedy for gain, you're bringing trouble upon your own house. Verse 28 says, the heart of the righteous studieth to answer. That's a good one, right? The hearts of the righteous study how to answer. Study. Well, I want to have an answer for that. Let me think. They're thoughtful. They don't just react and spew. They go, all right, how should I answer that? They pause. The heart of the righteous studieth to answer, but the mouth of the wicked poureth out evil things. Once again, They have a spout. And stuff comes out. Verse 29, the Lord is far from the wicked, but he heareth the prayer of the righteous. The Lord is far from the wicked, but he hears the prayer of the righteous. I've seen things. I've seen the most wicked pop stars in lewd costumes get together with their whole band and all their dancers and join hands and have a prayer before they go out and act vulgar. And honestly, the Lord is far from the wicked. He's not listening to that prayer. He's offended by it. But he hears the prayer of the righteous. Verse 30 says, the light of the eyes rejoiceth the heart, and a good report maketh the bones fat. We like them big fat bones. That's a good thing in the Bible. English Standard Version says, the light of the eyes rejoices the heart, and good news refreshes the bones. Is that better? You're like, I don't want fat bones. Refreshes the bones. We have kind ways of talking about obesity, don't we? And we say, he's really big boned. Big boned? What do you got? What do you got, X-ray vision? What do you mean, big boned? What does that mean? That's one of those expressions I've never really bought. I like to refresh them bones. Verse 31, the ear that heareth reproof of life, the ear that heareth the reproof of life abideth among the wise. They'll dwell among the wise. You find yourself in the company of the wise. Verse 32, he that refuseth instruction despiseth his own soul, but he that heareth reproof getteth understanding. So where do you get understanding? Well, one of the ways you can get it is by hearing reproof. Verse 33 says, the fear of the Lord is the instruction of wisdom. And before honor is humility. And it's only that way all the time. Humility comes before honor. That's the law in this universe. God has made it plain through his Son. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, humiliated, knocked down. But whoever humbles himself will be exalted, lifted up. Humble yourself, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that in due season he may lift you up. In due time, he'll exalt. What do you think, guys? I think we can wade on into chapter 16. Verse 1 says, the preparation of the heart in man and the answer of the tongue is from the Lord. Okay, preparation, that's another way of saying, the English Standard Version says, the plans of the heart belong to man, but the answer of the tongue is from the Lord. We can plan, and we should plan, but remember what James says. Don't be saying, here's what I'm going to do, here's my plan. James says, you ought to say in humility, if the Lord wills, we'll do such and such. Verse 2 says, all the ways of man are clean in his own eyes. All the ways of a man are clean in his own eyes. We don't see our own crud too good, but the Lord weigheth the spirits. Better translated, he weighs the motives. Our actions may look good to us, but he's weighing out our motives. Verse 3, commit thy works unto the Lord, and thy thoughts shall be established. Your plans. If you'll commit your way to the Lord, your plans will be established. Verse 4 says, the Lord hath made all things for himself, yea, even the wicked for the day of evil. Even the wicked for the day of trouble, the day of judgment. Do you understand that God has made it all, even those who will ultimately be damned? He made all things for himself, even the wicked. Everyone will bring glory to God one way or the other, either by receiving his grace or by rejecting him and receiving judgment. But in the end, God is vindicated. Verse 5 says, everyone that is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Though hand join in hand, he shall not be unpunished. It doesn't matter if the whole stinking world unionizes and locks arms to challenge God. It doesn't matter. And they're going to do that in the end. That is Armageddon. Doesn't end well for the rebels. Though hand join in hand, it's not going to keep them from being punished. So remember that everyone who is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. It really grosses God out. Verse 6 says, by mercy and truth, iniquity is purged. I like that, though, but I'm grateful it's not just truth, but mercy and truth together. Iniquity is purged. And by the fear of the Lord, men depart from evil. That's how people depart from evil. They suddenly realize they got to answer to God, and reverence motivates people departing from evil. Verse 7 says, when a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh even his enemies to be at peace with him. Now, that's a principle. It's not going to always be that way. That's why it is written in Romans, I think it's the 16th chapter. As much as it depends upon you, live at peace with all men. New Testament. Sometimes, even after you've done everything, you still got enemies that hate you for no good reason. But as a principle, when a man's ways please the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. That probably has something to do with what we've read already about a soft answer turning away wrath, appeasing anger by responding and not reacting. Verse 8 says, better is a little with righteousness than great revenues without right. Yep. Verse 9 says, a man's heart deviseth his way, but the Lord directeth his steps. We can plan, but the Lord ultimately is going to have his will accomplished. God is the one who directs. Verse 10 says, a divine sentence is in the lips of the king. His mouth transgresseth not in judgment. Does that mean that everything the king says is right on? No, this is what the king is supposed to be doing. We do know that all through history there have been wicked kings. In fact, way more wicked kings, wicked queens, than righteous kings. But nevertheless, the king is supposed to be doing God's work. His mouth is not supposed to be sinning in judgment. We may find ourselves, I don't know how this is thing going to turn out, our whole experiment of, the people governing themselves through representatives, it may well be over. We may well have to learn to live with kings and queens. Again, it's possible. Verse 11 says, just weight and balance are the Lord's. All the weights of the bag are his work, or his concern. That's another way of translating that. He's spoken about this already in Proverbs, that false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but the statement that a just weight and balance. So in business, in law, there should be an evenness. That's what God is into. Verse 12 says, it's an abomination to kings to commit wickedness, for the throne is established by righteousness. But there are far many, many who have tried to establish their throne with wickedness. King Saul, and currently Kim Jong-un. History and the present are full of Fidel Castros who've tried to hang on. And the tyrants, they try to establish their throne, as it were, by force and tyranny. But it doesn't. It cannot. A throne is established by righteousness, because people will continue to follow a righteous leader, a righteous king. Verse 13 says, righteous lips are the delight of kings, and they love him that speaketh right. That is a good king. There are those who are not good, and they want somebody to tell them what they want to hear. Verse 14 says, the wrath of a king is as messengers of death, but a wise man will pacify it. A wise man. And wisdom gives us a means to respond, to diffuse, to reason. Verse 15 says, in the light of the king's countenance is life, and his favor is as a cloud of the latter rain. Do you realize that the vast majority of all of the history of the world and all of the world, from the introduction of sin the entire age of man, the vast majority of people have and still live under kings. Well, you can call them something different, but they're still kings. It's a very unique thing that has only happened, and realize that America is just this little tiny little dash on the timeline of human history, the history of the world. We were to be without a king. Yeah, we started that. We really did. Kings have got a lot of power. So the light of the king's countenance, his favor, is kind of a big deal. And his favor is like a cloud of the latter rain. Verse 16 says, how much better is it to get wisdom than gold? Yeah. To get understanding rather, to be chosen than silver. So much better. This is the stuff we should be after. Verse 17, the highway of the upright is to depart from evil. He that keepeth his way preserveth his soul. Preserving your own life. Verse 18, pride goeth before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. It's only always that way. Pride goes before destruction. Verse 19, better it is to be of a humble spirit with a lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. So wisdom is continually connected to humility. And foolishness is always, in Proverbs, connected to pride. And the other way around. Verse 20 says, he that handleth a matter wisely shall find good. That's the thing. To handle a matter with wisdom, to handle it, you can find good if you handle it wisely. He will find good. And whoso trusteth in the Lord, happy is he. Verse 21, the wise in heart should be called prudent. Actually, the English Standard Version says the wise of heart is called discerning. I like that. And the sweetness of the lips increaseth learning. English Standard Version says, and the sweetness of speech increases persuasiveness. Sweetness of speech. It's a wonderful thing, guys. It's one of the things that sets us apart from all the other creatures. We can actually communicate abstract thought with words. And with that is tremendous power. We can actually affect other people. We can actually do things. We can accomplish things. This gift of speech, being able to communicate, it's a wonderful thing. Verse 22, understanding is a wellspring of life unto him that hath it. But the instruction of fools is folly. And 23, the heart of the wise teacheth his mouth. That's wisdom teaches the mouth how to speak and addeth learning to his lips. In the same way, the two verses back, learning is translated in the English Standard Version as persuasiveness. It adds persuasiveness to his lips. So wisdom and understanding. Verse 22, what did I leave off? 24, pleasant words are as a honeycomb. I like that, pleasant words, they're sweet. And I like honeycomb, you guys? You with me on that? We like sweetness. Well, if you like that, pleasant words are like that. Sweet to the soul, health to the bones. Verse 25, there's a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. You've heard that bit, haven't you, from stand-up legend Brian Regan, going to the doctor in the emergency room? Doctor asks the most patronizing question. What seems to be the problem? To which he said, well, it seems that my insides want to be on the outsides, but I'm no doctor. That's a good one. It seems. When it comes to this seeming thing, there's a way that seems. It looks right. It seems right, but it actually is the road to death. The end thereof are the ways of death. Verse 26, he that laboreth, laboreth for himself, for his mouth craveth it of him. That's Let me give you that one in the English Standard Version, because it's even better. A worker's appetite works for him. His mouth urges him on. That is why we don't need a welfare state. This is why in the New Testament, 1 Thessalonians, the Apostle Paul said, if a man will not work, neither let him eat. Don't be feeding that bum. Don't feed that lazy man. The man who will not work. Because if nothing else will motivate him, hunger will. That's the design of God. Worker's appetite works for him. A motivator. You guys know that trail we were on today, going down Second Pond. That trail has, prior to my knee injury, been my run. It's an awful run. But what keeps you moving on that run are the bugs. Oh, you've experienced it. Fortunately, there were enough of us today that there were fewer bugs per person. Go down there by yourself. I'm telling you, you'd be running with a bough, an evergreen bough, running and swatting. But they'll keep you moving. They'll serve you. You won't stop. You won't quit. You're like, oh, I'm going to take a little breather. Oh, no, those bugs will keep you going. Well, hunger is supposed to work the same way. Hunger should cause a person to press on. Verse 27, an ungodly man diggeth up evil in his lips. In his lips there's a burning fire. Didn't James say that about the tongue? Can light a fire? Would a whole set all the world on fire? Verse 28, a froward man soweth strife, and a whisperer separateth chief friends. A whisperer causes division. Verse 29, a violent man enticeth his neighbor and leadeth him into the way that is not good. That's what the violent man does. Verse 30, he shutteth his eyes to devise froward things. Moving his lips, he bringeth it to pass. Let me give you verse 30, English Standard Version. Whoever winks his eyes plans dishonest things. That's the whole thing about shutting his eyes. You can't just speak plain words. He's got a wink, he's got a nod, he's got to do crazy stuff with his eyebrows. He's communicating other things, you know? I have a lot of fun with my eyebrows with little kids. Little kids, because I can do stuff with my eyebrows, man. I can make them wave and fly like a crow. And it's allowed me to make friends with kids who are at first horrified. Little kids will be like, and then they'll try it, and they'll move their whole face. It's kind of cool. But there's this sneaky guy. He's always winking. He's always sending a subtle message. In verse 31, we're almost there. King James Version, the hoary head is a crown of glory. The hoary head is gray hair. If it be found in the way of righteousness, now I point out to you in verse 31, in the King James Version, if is italicized. It's not actually there. So verse 31, English Standard Version, gray hair is a crown of glory. It's gained in a righteous life. So gray hair, it's a cool thing, or it could be. Now you realize not everybody with gray hair has gained it in the way of righteousness. There's all kinds of really, really wicked, really stupid gray-headed people. But this is laying out an ideal. This is what's supposed to be. You're supposed to be able to look to the gray head because they've lived, you know, they've collected wisdom and experience on their way to getting gray. They've been around a while. That's the theory, right? Verse 32, he that is slow to anger is better than the mighty. He that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh a city. Come on up, man, come on. If you can actually control yourself, you're mightier than the guy who can take over the whole city, but he can't control himself. Think about that one. If you're slow to anger, you're better than the mighty. Verse 33, the lot is cast into the lap, but the whole disposing thereof is of the Lord. Every decision is from the Lord. So the, how the, the lot. We don't really do the lot, so, but we understand the concept of flipping a coin or throwing the dice. What they're saying is how that dice lands, that's from the Lord. He's in charge of the whole universe and all the laws, how the coin lands, how the lot falls. Now, the casting of lots was used in Israel to determine the will of God on many matters. The very last time it's mentioned in the whole Bible is in Acts chapter 1, and it's the last time it's mentioned because of what happens in Acts chapter 2. Something better than casting lots is the leading of the Holy Spirit. Holy Spirit comes in Acts chapter 2, and there's not another reference in the rest of the Bible from that point forward of casting lots.